U.S. Senator Mark Kelly just keeps stepping in it.
My concern is with the service member that we're going to put these individuals in a really, really tough decision, in a tough place. And, you know, they may find out, you know, down the road that they did something that is illegal. It is not fair to them. That's why we need presidents and Secretary of Defense who understand the Constitution, who understand the rule of law, and have more respect for the Constitution and the country and service members than the whims of a president.
They're following unlawful commands from Donald Trump. And if you're committing offenses and your defense is going to be, I was just following orders. You know, that didn't work out so well at Nuremberg. It certainly didn't work out so well for Lieutenant Calley when he, you know, engaged in mass murder, the My Lai massacre. Someday, when the rule of law comes back into the light of day, will have to be tackled. They'll have to be held accountable for those abuses.
When you and your colleagues made that video, were there specific potentially illegal orders that you were thinking about that were the sort of precipitating cause for you guys to get together and do that?
You don't want to wait for your kid to get hit by a car before you tell them to look both ways.
The Pentagon confirmed to multiple outlets that the video is under review by the Office of the General Counsel to determine whether it constitutes improper interference with military discipline.
You can't have a functioning military if there is disorder and chaos within the ranks, and that's what these Democrat members were encouraging. It's very clear.
Regardless, Kelly keeps sticking his foot in his mouth.
You mentioned that you are a captain in the Navy. If you received that order, would you have carried it out?
No.
Kelly's pre-Senate business history has resurfaced amid heightened scrutiny of Chinese influence in U.S. technology. From 2013 to 2020, Kelly co-founded and served as a board member of Worldview Enterprises, a Tucson-based company that develops high-altitude stratospheric balloons originally marketed for commercial and research purposes. In 2013 and again in 2016, Worldview accepted investments from Tencent Holdings, the Chinese tech giant closely tied to the Chinese Communist Party and subject to national security laws requiring data cooperation with Beijing. Tencent's WeChat platform has been cited by U.S. officials as a tool for censorship and surveillance.
The facts are China has put a lot of money into high-altitude balloons for what you'd call satellite arrays, surveillance arrays, but more importantly, communication systems. But they've also put a lot of money in to deliver a electromagnetic pulse weapon that's detonated and powered by an atomic or hydrogen bomb going off. It's estimated that a 40 megaton bomb, that's a medium-sized bomb, would knock out large portions of the United States if it was detonated around 80,000 feet in the right conditions. But there's more radiation that goes further at night because of radiation that's already in the atmosphere from the sun. And so they would try to detonate these at night. They would have a much bigger effect. You've seen what solar flares do, wreaking havoc with satellites. That's nothing compared to this. And the fact that Biden didn't order this shot down day one, the fact that the Communist Chinese confirmed it was theirs, just shows you what the Border Patrol said. They're not watching the border. They're not watching anything except us.
$100,000 a month as a retainer for Hunter Biden to work for a Chinese entity with ties to the Chinese Communist Party. $500,000 right off the top as a one-time payment to Hunter. And $65,000 a month for James Biden, the president's brother. We're talking about the question of what could Hunter Biden possibly bring to the table?
The fact that this has been going on is important. Yes, the globalists set up China, but by the time Xi Jinping came along, and now he's arrested his predecessor that was working with the globalist, Xi Jinping has told big tech and the New World Order, I'm in charge, and I'm not going to deal with you anymore.
Kelly divested his ownership stake and resigned from the board in early 2020 upon entering the Senate race, placing his holdings in a blind trust. Which begs the question, are we blindly trusting CCP sedition blowhard Senator Kelly? John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
With your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back to the American Journal. We're excited you're all jumping on board with us today. A lot happening over here, of course, specifically with the holiday season. I know. It's President Trump's in the White House. We could say Merry Christmas, but there are some people who claim to celebrate a holiday known as Kwanzaa, and it really had me scratching my head because I never knew of a holiday before, and then I quickly learned that it's actually just not even real. Joining me to discuss is none other than Harrison Smith. He is here to break down the, I'll say it's the myth that is Kwanzaa.
The myth of Kwanzaa, exactly.
Yeah, and you're also the host of War Room, I should disclose as well.
I am. Merry Christmas. I've noticed people are saying Merry Christmas more. Do you think that's just because I'm a Christmassy type of guy, so they say it to me? Or do you think that's a real thing, people are saying Christmas more?
I think it's a real thing, and I feel like we're kind of, I've been applying public pressure every time someone turns to me and says, happy holidays, like, give him like the eye
look. You look him in the eye. Yeah. It's like, Merry Christmas.
It's Merry Christmas, Trump's president.
it's like the trans people. It's ma'am. It's Merry Christmas. Well, we know that the war on Christmas has been real. It's been going on for a while. They like to pretend it's not, but we're going to launch a counterattack now. We're going to launch a war on Kwanzaa. And, you know, I was talking, and when normal people hear me say this, normal people like my wife, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going in early tomorrow. I'm going to go on American Journal. She's like, oh, what are you talking about? I'm like, I'm going to destroy Kwanzaa. And she's like, why? Like, what are you talking? Because they have this idea that it's like a religious thing, that it's like some deeply held spiritual practice. It's not. It was literally invented in the 1960s by a radical communist black separatist because he wanted to destroy black people's love of Christianity because he saw it as an outgrowth of capitalism in America, and he hated both of those things. So it's not spiritual. It's not valid in any way. He just took a bunch of Swahili names, Swahili words, and made up things and then put it to a mockery of Hanukkah and called it a religion. Now, there's a classic article from this that people repost just about every year from Ann Coulter called Kwanzaa is a Holiday Made Up by the FBI. And she basically runs that this guy, Ron Karenga, who's the guy who invented Kwanzaa, a.k.a. Dr. Maulana Karenga, founder of the United Slaves, which was a violent nationalist rival to the Black Panthers, invented this in the 1960s basically at the behest of the FBI or under the purview of the FBI. But yeah, it's all literally just a radical communist anti-American practice that was supposed to, play into this idea that like, oh, you're reclaiming your heritage, you're reclaiming your history, Africa, the homeland, the motherland, and, you want to reconnect with your spiritual past. So it's playing on something that's like really deeply human and emotional, like you want to be connected to your past, but it's all just bullcrap. It's just a lie. It's just nonsense. And it's anti-Christian, which I think is particularly ridiculous. And you can read the guy's writings. I mean, he actually hated Christianity. He wanted to destroy Christianity. He wanted to, create something for black people in America to break away from Christianity because he saw it as like the, European oppressor religion, which it's all just communist hogwash anyway. Mm-hmm. But also, then you go and you've got articles like this. African Christianity thrived long before white men arrived. So Africa was Christian long before Europe was. Ethiopia had some of the earliest Christian communities. Many of the earliest saints are Christian. Some of my favorite, King Caleb is one of the coolest saints of all time. And we don't have to get into that right now. But the point is that, like, it's ridiculous to claim that Christianity was somehow foisted on these, you know, the poor slaves, and it was used to keep them enslaved. I mean, that's the idea that's being perpetuated by the people who created Kwanzaa, when the reality is that, you know, Christianity was, you know, one of the greatest things that ever happened to the African-American community, and the African-American community is much more strongly Christian than other, you know, racial communities in this country. And Kwanzaa is a deliberate attempt to weaken that connection by claiming that Christianity is somehow European and white and therefore racist and capitalist and bad and has to be overthrown, when the reality is Christianity has a longer history in Africa than it does in America. And if black people want to connect to their history, that would be a great place to start. So what else do you want to know about Kwanzaa? Because I've been doing the research, and it's literally just nothing. But I do want to say that, like, I don't know, maybe in the African American community, people actually do celebrate Kwanzaa. I kind of have a hard time believing that. I've never heard anybody celebrate Kwanzaa. Well, it's like the joke that, like, you know, I always think of the Futurama clip when there's the Santa robot and the Hanukkah robot and the Kwanzaa robot, and the Kwanzaa robot just goes around handing out a book called What the Hell is Kwanzaa? Because nobody knows what Kwanzaa is. But if you do have this, I don't mean to be insulting. Like, I understand the idea to, like, want to reach back into your past and see. But, like, that's, you know, Christmas does that. Christmas already has that aspect. The Christmas tree, the Yule log, like, these are kind of like pagan traditions that were incorporated into the Christian ceremony, and sort of their meanings were made to comport with Christianity rather than their pagan roots. Like, you can do that with Africa. Why not take some of the African traditions and incorporate them into Christianity, into the Christmas tradition, if that's what you want to do? But to create this other holiday, this fake harvest festival holiday in the middle of winter, like, it literally makes no sense, and is completely ridiculous and spiritually bankrupt and a communist plot. So that's what
Kwanzaa is.
And
that's just putting
it
nicely. And you know, Harrison, I laugh about this, but, you know, Kamala Harris, when she was trying to win over voters, was running around the country trying to convince them that she was black enough for their vote, would tell them all. There's a soundbite of where she's going over her traditions of celebrating Kwanzaa with her family and her uncles. And she's got this whole illustration of what happened during Kwanzaa. And it just didn't make any sense, because it sounded like, as she's talking about it, that she's building up this story that she's just now created in her head,
right,
and manifesting it into speech, I guess. It was pretty concerning that she was able to do all of this. But here's my question for you: when did this go mainstream? Because I remember going to elementary school, which wasn't that long ago, or in '90s, this wasn't a thing until I got to, like, high school.
You didn't have this as a thing?
No. We had a lot of black Americans in our school.
That's interesting. See, yeah. Everybody has a different experience with Kwanzaa. I remember it in elementary school, and then I feel like it sort of faded away or went away.
Darn it.
I meant to start this segment with a great joke, confusing Kwanzaa with Kazaa. The moment's passed, but I was going to start by being like, well, it's a file sharing operation that predated LimeWire, yeah, just because literally nobody knows what Kwanzaa is. Yeah, it started in 1966 is when the guy came up with it. He'd apparently invented they call them the principles. Ngozi Saba, the seven principles. So this would actually be a great thing to ask Kamala Harris, because I would bet every dollar I've ever earned that she could not name the seven principles of Ngozi Saba. And that would really put the lie to her saying that she celebrates it. I mean, I can't believe that didn't work. So she tried to pander to the African-American community by relating her Kwanzaa tradition she held with her family.
So bad.
And all the black people in America are like,
yeah, it was bad.
What is Kwanzaa? What are you even talking about? Yeah, so there's these, like, seven vague ideas of togetherness that this guy basically made up himself. And, you know, I was researching this and going, well, do these values, do these principles come from anything? And it's just like, no, they're just Swahili words, basically, that this guy decided made a vague sort of pan-African philosophy, theology mindset. And it just means absolutely nothing, but it's all collectivism. It's all, you know, unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility. So that's one of the things they celebrate, is collective responsibility, cooperative economics. It's literally just communism. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. It's not African. It's just communism. And so there's, like, three color candles, and they mean something. I really have a hard time, like, giving any credence to this whatsoever. Again,
yeah.
I don't know, maybe people have been tricked into thinking there's some sort of spiritual significance with Kwanzaa, but it is it is like the most baby language religion ever, where it's just like, we're going to make religion and it's going to be about unity and togetherness and power. And it's like, what does any of this mean? This doesn't mean anything. This is all nonsense. And just because you put an African word to it doesn't imbue it with some sort of intelligence. And again, the whole point of this, it's not like they created Kwanzaa as a standalone celebration just to celebrate African Americans or African history. It is literally, it was an attack on Christianity. Karenga created Kwanzaa to give African Americans an opportunity to celebrate themselves and their history rather than simply imitate the practice of the dominant society, i.e. mainstream American holidays dominated by Christmas. Again, you don't think they celebrate Christmas in Africa? You don't think they celebrate Christmas in Ethiopia or some of the oldest Christian communities live?
Yeah.
It's what we, you know, see now, where they basically take something good. They say, oh, that's a negative outgrowth of white supremacy. And then so they try to demonize the good thing by associating with white people who they've already effectively demonized. So, you know, whether it's like the freedom of association or, you know, all these wonderful morals that we have, they go, that those are imposed by white people. You should be irresponsible and mean. And so you're far away from the white people. They did the same thing with Christianity. Oh, that's a white people's religion. We're going to draw you away from Christianity to help you connect with your roots. And it's like, what? He described Christianity as a, quote, white religion that black people should shun, and reportedly called Jesus psychotic. Kwanzaa was designed as a secular non-Christian holiday emphasizing African heritage and communitarian values. Yeah, don't say communist, say communitarian, as if that's tricking anybody. We see through you, pinko. Oh, and I should also mention that this guy, like, went to prison for a long time for beating and imprisoning women. So,
that just adds up.
I'm not sure which candle on the Kwanzaa menorah the beating and raping women would be, but
if he was still here, Kamala Harris would raise his bail money for him.
Probably so. Yeah, he'd probably have a, you know, position on her cabinet if she ever got into office.
It's pure insanity that we've normalized this, but. You know, I was just recently in Grapevine, Texas. I was just at the Christmas market that they have there. It's beautiful. They actually call it the capital of Texas. As a person who's just moved to Texas, I'm now learning about this. But it was kind of sad because although it's beautiful, we now have this issue here where people who are not or are trying to disassociate religion, Christianity, with Christmas have now infiltrated and they've taken over. And so while I'm walking around, there's tons of just Muslims walking around. And it's not just here in Texas. We see it throughout Europe, too, Germany and other places. You know, so many countries now can't even have Christmas markets anymore because of the threat of Islamic terrorism that looms over them. I kind of want to talk about that a little bit, taking Christ out of Christmas, and let you kind of like dive into that angle of all of this. Because obviously that was the goal of this, was to do just that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like we started off by sort of joking about the war on Christmas. And I remember being, you know, a high schooler ever watching The Daily Show or, you know, whatever liberal nonsense was on MTV. And just hearing this idea of like the war on Christmas, like, okay, sorry, dude, the Starbucks coffee cup is red. Like, who really cares?
Yeah.
But then you get older, you get wiser, you start looking into things. You're like, wait, they are literally attacking Christmas, like very deliberately and a very sort of blatant, and have been for a long time. Again, Kwanzaa started in the 60s as literally an assault on Christmas, as an alternative to Christmas. But, you know, it goes back even farther than that. And I think people this year, it's sort of every year, it's sort of interesting. We have like every year Christmas comes around and every year people like realize, oh, all these Christmas songs don't talk about Jesus, huh? That's kind of weird. I mean, it's been going on for a very long time, this idea of like drawing Christmas away from its original intention. Obviously, you watch the Peanuts cartoon from the 1950s, and it's about how Christmas is being too commercialized and merchandise, and, you know, it's lost the spirit of the age. So I think Christmas has had a constant struggle with this. And, you know, we're sort of always stuck between like this sort of imagined history where everything was wholesome and wonderful and good. And certainly there are aspects of that. Like, you know, I'm not one of these people that's like, Norman Rockwell never existed. Like, no, Norman Rockwell painted the world around him. That's what America looked like back then. It was a Norman Rockwell type of world. But at the same time, the celebrations of Christmas used to just be like drunken carousing. Like the big thing in America in like the 1800s, Christmas was you go to New York and you get drunk and you have a big parade. And I mean, it was still wholesome because, you know, it was It was eggnog. It was jolly. It wasn't a bunch of, you know, hooligans destroying things. But it wasn't also, you know, it didn't have the vibe that Christmas now has of a quiet, your family. And so, you know, Christmas has changed over the years. That's fine, right? It's then like, you know, the Coca-Cola company basically creates the modern Santa Claus. And we sort of adopt that. And, you know, people don't like that. But anyway, regardless, I think the deliberate attempt to not just pull Christmas away from Christianity, but also just like not celebrate Christmas as much, not worry about the decorations. Because that's one thing that struck me probably 10 years ago is going to Washington, D.C. in June. Not sure if you know what June is. If you went to Washington, D.C. in June, you would know because there were rainbows everywhere. And I remember driving around D.C. and going,
yes,
this is more decorations than Christmas. It literally, their pride decorations were more all-encompassing. The churches, but every restaurant had, you know, big rainbow banners and flyers and just, it was everywhere. And it was, I just looked around and went, wait, this is way more decoration than they do for Christmas. They'll put up a wreath and that's it, right? They'll put lights on one tree, you know, and they'll turn them on for Christmas. But it's like they go all out for pride. So, like, these are things that we as a society use as, like, touchstones of, like, what do we care about? You know, what do we define ourselves by? And I feel like as we move away from, you know, going all out for Christmas and decorating, you know, every street pole and every flagpole in town, as I remember growing up, now it's like, well, we only have, you know, budget for decorations, and we really got to prioritize pride this year. And so I think it's a, you know, it's sort of a symbol of where we're going as a country, and it's a hell of a lot less fun, in my opinion.
No, it is. It's definitely getting there, and it's a little infuriating to sit back and watch. But I mean, you're obviously raising a young family. How do you push back on all of this? Because, I mean, the propaganda is real, and I don't think people realize it. We've been infiltrated completely.
Yeah. That's a good question. How do you push back on it? I mean, I don't know. My kids are so young. It's kind of like, it kind of doesn't matter quite yet. I mean, it matters still.
Yeah, you can build them up an environment now.
Yeah. But, you know, it's like we read the Advent story every single night, and my 2-year-old still doesn't quite know who Mary is. So it's like, you know, it's like, well, how much is, you know, it really going to matter if she's watching The Grinch rather than, you know, hearing a Bible story? Is it really that big of a deal? You know, I think that your kids learn a lot more from observation than instruction. Mm-hmm. So I think what I try to do is just, like, you know, through your action, just show, like, you know, faithfulness and that you take praying seriously and that you close your eyes and bow your head. And I think that stuff actually matters more because they get a sense of, like, what you actually value through your actions. And I think that's personally sort of, I don't know, I try not to, like, beat my kids over the head with, like, I don't know, like, let them have fun. I want them to love Christmas. Like, my son loves Grinch. Okay, fine. It wouldn't be my first choice, you know, of, like, instruction thing, but whatever. He's a green goblin that looks funny. Great. He loves Rudolph. Okay, it's not really a Christmas story, but who doesn't love Yukon Cornelius? Who doesn't love the abominable snowman? Who doesn't love a 2-year-old trying to say the word abominable?
So, oh, I still can't do it.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I think that as long as you have, like, the your core values inside your family, and that sort of thing is that, like, you can't get that from outside. It's nice to have a society and to have a culture that uplifts that and upholds that and makes it easy, you know, to celebrate those things. But that's not where you seek it out. That's generated inside your family, right?
Yeah. No, I think that's the case. I mean, my family, I mean, this is the problem with, okay, it's not the problem because my parents are probably watching. But growing up, I'm one of seven. And so.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we're a squad. Six girls, one boy.
Whoa.
And I gave my brother heck.
Yeah, I bet.
He's traumatized his day.
I had two sisters. That was hard enough.
Yeah, but we celebrated Christmas, but we never had the religious context of any of it. And so as I've gotten older, I've learned more and obviously have started reading the Bible and stuff like that. I'm just like, man, the advantages to growing up like this is just, it defies everything else that you see in the outside world. And I think children who don't grow up with the context and kind of the vision of everything through the Bible, I think you totally have lost out big time there, because everything, every way you're supposed to live your life is definitely written out for you, whether you choose to do so or not. So for me, it's always like, man, I think that we should be teaching every kid this, get rid of this Marxist nonsense where we push this fake religion onto people, remind them that Christmas is celebrated for the reason that we all know it is celebrated, not for this fictional characters that we like to make up and stuff.
Yeah.
So it was a little discouraging seeing, but you know, it's not just us here in the United States who are dealing with this. Throughout Europe, I mean, we're sitting here watching back as multiple Christmas markets were dealing with the ISIS threats, and you see them getting foiled, obviously. But gosh, we saw one get carried out a couple of years ago. I think it was a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago.
Well, every year, yeah, every year. I think multiple Christmas markets have been attacked this year, and yeah, some places are just not doing them anymore. Mm-hmm. But of course, that's extending to New Year's Eve. Like, they're not doing New Year's Eve on the Champs-Élysées. They're not doing New Year's Eve in Melbourne. So, you know, it's actually even a bigger problem. Like, obviously, they target Christmas markets on purpose for that. But it's like, okay, you're giving up your ability to gather in large groups. Like, that's crazy. That's actually crazy. Yeah. You know, the religious connection and, you know, the message of that, I always find it interesting because, again, having kids and then having to explain it to them, you sort of understand things yourself for the first time a lot. And, you know, a lot of people make a lot of the idea of like, oh, Christianity is just this imposition on a pagan holiday. It's about the winter solstice. And you have this, you know, the connection to the Norse celebrations, to the Christmas tree and the Yule log and all this stuff. But it's like, do you understand that's because like the Jesus story in a weird way is like reflected in the natural cycles and in life? Like, I remember talking about Easter with my son last year, and you know, he's like, why do we celebrate Jesus's resurrection with like eggs and bunnies? Like, it doesn't seem like it makes any sense. Yeah. People can make a lot of hay of that, going, it's a pagan celebration. But it's like, well, what happened? Like, every year the earth dies in winter and is reborn in spring. That's what is symbolized by Jesus Christ dying and being reborn. The winter solstice is, you know, the darkest time, and then, you know, the rebirth and things get brighter and the days longer from then on out. So there's this like to me, that's not some sort of, you know, weird like paganistic, oh, you're celebrating the stars, or like, you know, you just think you're celebrating Jesus, really you're celebrating Venus or whatever. It's like, no, it's connecting the spiritual world with the physical world and the very deep connections there that exist and are like exemplified and modeled by Jesus, starting with Christmas, him being born and dying and resurrecting in Easter. These are like reflections of the natural world in a really like profound and meaningful way, not in like a, I don't know, a cultural appropriation way.
Yeah. Well, we have about 30 seconds. How do we get rid of Kwanzaa and stop people from pretending? Okay, we don't have to get rid of them completely, but you said you were going to destroy them. Or destroy it, the holiday, I should say.
I think you already figured it out. We need to stop the government from pushing it. I'm like 100% sure the vast majority of Kwanzaa is celebrated in elementary schools and middle schools around the country and nowhere else. I think if we stop pushing this through the education system, nobody will ever have to hear about it ever again. It'll be a cultural artifact. 20 years from now, people go, remember Kwanzaa? And the other people will go, no. And that'll be the history of Kwanzaa.
Yeah, well, that's what we should start working on, because we got to get that done. Harrison, stay put. We got more to discuss in just a second. I wanted to remind our audience that over at thealexjonesstore.com right now, we just launched the Ultimate Power. If you're someone looking to boost your energy, focus, blood flow, or endurance, this formula is for you. You got to head on over to the shop right now, because, folks, the more you buy, the more you save. If you buy 3 bottles, you get 30% off, 2 bottles, 20% off, and then a bottle, you get 10% off. But most importantly, folks, this is going to give you natural caffeine, which we could all use. It's about 100 milligrams, the equivalent to one cup of coffee without that mid-afternoon crash, which is very important. And the vitamins in this are what keep you going, B12 and B6 as well. And just going to throw this in there as well. Every purchase you get or you make over at the Alex Jones store, specifically on this, you get 100 entries to win that Ford Raptor plus 100. Gosh, I keep adding extra money to this. $10,000 cash. That's $10,000 cash over at thealexjonesstore.com. So head on over right now to the shop. Harrison, stay put. We got more to discuss in just a little bit. And man, oh man, is it about to get good.
President Trump was cooking at McDonald's the other day and giving people french fries. And people criticized me and they said, well, you know, he's out there giving fast food. And I said, I don't have anything against fast food. I'm against food that has seed oils. When I was a kid, McDonald's was made with tallow fat. That was good for you. Your body needs that. It makes you healthy.
It's great.
Why aren't we making with Telefat again?
RFK Jr. shocked many when he sat down for a meal with Fox's Sean Hannity. The pair dined at fast food chain Steak and Shake, eating burgers and fries in a bid to highlight the chain's switch to frying their food in beef tallow, which is a healthier alternative to traditionally used seed oils.
People are raving about these french fries. You taste them.
They're amazing. They really are.
I am so excited. After over a year, we have the highest quality private labeled beef tallow out there. You've heard RFK Jr. rave about it, the health effects, how good it is. This sucker is boom heavy. This is high quality. It is very competitively priced, and it funds this whole operation. It is optimal human beef tallow, grass-fed from thealexjonesstore.com. And it is night and day compared to all these other fats and all these trans fats and all of the seed oils that are so toxic, especially when you heat them. Not this. It is so good. It is now available, discounted, at thealexjonesstore.com. No preservatives, no artificial ingredients, gluten-free, packed with nutrients, unlike seed oils, which are fake toxic garbage. Beef tallow is real food that promotes whole body health and is so good for your brain. And 25% off right now. Beef tallow is 100% pure beef fat concentrated, packed with vitamins like A, D, E, and K to support hormone health and fuels your brain with clean energy. No industrial processing, used by humans forever. No additives, preservatives, or GMO garbage. High smoke point to support various cooking methods like frying, roasting, or baking without releasing toxic fumes or free-range free radicals. Rich, clean flavor. Ladies and gentlemen, it's night and day. Beef tallow is the best. We've got a private label, one of the top brands in the country at thealexjonesstore.com. We are so excited about this. And again, Kennedy talks about the health effects, talks about how delicious it is. I remember until the 90s, the best places you get french fries at, McDonald's, where they went total GMO, fried their fries in beef tallow. God, did they taste good. So it's also totally delicious. You fund the operation. And cows that God gave us are amazing. We also have our bovine colostrum is a private label of the highest quality, 2,000 milligrams per scoop with other natural herb compounds, the marshmallow root that accelerates it. And it's the first 2 weeks of any mammal, including humans, isn't what you think of as milk. It's basically clear, and it's full of all of these super nutrients that boost your immune system, that grow your brain, that help your cells, that energize everything. It's literally the first mother's milk concentrated. Big discounts on it right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And there's so many other amazing products there as well. We have the new creatine gummies that are the highest quality type of creatine, concentrated 5 milligrams per gummy. Everybody knows about creatine for your muscles and working out and your heart and stuff, but the brain effects and with your nerve endings, it is truly incredible. So be sure and check that out as well. Our new creatine gummies in 2 different flavors. It's a really great deal, a huge container of them for a low price. And then talk about your mitochondria, your cells, skipping multiple oxidation processes in the cells, cleaning them out, getting fast, clean energy with no letdown. And that's just the first effects. And everything else for your brain, your body, it is amazing. The workouts, Ultra Methylene Blue. We have the best medical grade. You've heard me talk about it. You've heard the rave reviews. You're insane if you don't get it. And yes, the third shipment, both have been small because it's very hard to make. It's got so many great ingredients. Proprietary Methylene Red. Look at what's in it. Look up each ingredient. Ask Brock about it. Ask your doctor about it. Ultra Methylene Red, a limited shipment, just came in today.
Your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back to the American Journal. We're excited you're all jumping on with us. Of course, a lot more to dive into. So buckle up. It's going to be a big one. All right, so I wanted to tell you all, we kind of went into it in detail in regards to a terror plot that was apparently taking place in Poland. Now, this is really scary given the fact that Poland has not brought in any of these Muslim migrants, but according to reports, there was someone, obviously, who is a Polish national who apparently was looking to carry out an ISIS-inspired terror plot on a Christmas market. Now, the Polish security services have detained a 19-year-old who is apparently a student at a Catholic university who was looking to create these explosives and carry out this plot on the Christmas market. So we're learning more and more about that. But that's all the information we have right now. Now, obviously, there's probably more there, but given the fact that Poland has completely rejected and has been retaliated against
in regards to not taking in any of these Muslim migrants because the EU has not been very happy with them. They've called them all different types of names for wanting to put their people first. This is deeply, deeply concerning. So how could someone be radicalized, obviously, as someone who lives in Poland, wants to now join ISIS? I mean, that's deeply concerning. But the reality of it is this is sweeping the entire world. ISIS is a very large threat, and obviously we know how this was all created, sadly. The reality of it is everyone is now dealing with this. There's no country that has been untouched by this ongoing threat. I want to play this clip for you because Australian officials are revealing specifically the key details in all of this by the Australia terror attack on Bondi Beach by giving you the details without giving you the key details. And they're using this moment to push for stricter gun laws, given the fact that Australia has some of the strictest we've seen thus far. Take a listen to clip 16.
Our approach to this terrible crime in New South Wales is multifaceted, but I want to make it clear that our efforts to firstly work with the New South Wales Police on counter-terrorism efforts continue. Secondly, fighting anti-Semitism in our community, which will not be done in a week or a month, but is a long-term important project for the government of New South Wales, working with civic leaders and the people of this state. Thirdly, gun law reform in New South Wales, with legislation brought into the New South Wales Parliament to make gun laws tougher in this state. I'm determined to bring in the toughest gun laws in Australia, and they'll be significantly tightened in New South Wales.
And it's interesting, right? Because they're pushing both South Wales, obviously. They're pushing throughout Australia. Here in the United States, they're pushing stricter gun laws. As if gun laws are the problem. Gun restriction needs to be buckled up. That's what they're trying to push. You know, we've talked about it. Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and we've heard Tim Walz here in the States pushing for stricter gun laws. But it's not the guns that are the problem. We have people in power right now who are refusing to address the greater issue here. And that's the Islam that we've imported over these last few years now. Well, it's finally hitting its breaking point, and the people are starting to see the true threat. Joining me to discuss, a man who's traveled the world and has studied this extensively. Welcome to the show, Larry Taunton. He's the host of Ideas Have Consequences, and he is back joining us to discuss just that. Larry, it's good to have you on, of course, because I've been sitting back and watching all of these global leaders popping out and saying, oh no, the problem here is guns. Even though they've imported Islam into their countries, we're refusing to call that out. And now we're also seeing places like Poland that are dealing with this ISIS threat, even though they've rejected these Muslim migrants completely, but it's finding ways to leak in through the internet. So what do you make of the very latest? Because again, Christians celebrating Christmas at Christmas markets, Jews celebrating the first night of Hanukkah on the beach, Hindus also just enjoying vacations. I mean, we're seeing the Islam threat all around the world, and very few are willing to call it out.
Yeah, well, they waste no tragedy, do they, Brianna? They're going to use it to push their agenda along, which of course is disarming decent law-abiding people, particularly in countries that have traditionally had, some element of a gun culture. So, for instance, me growing up in the American South, grew up going to high school with a gun rack, you know, in the back window. Those who are my age and older will recall that, gun racks in just about every house. And yet there were no mass shootings. The real problem here is the fact that the media has plotted to amputate the ideology that's driving this from the attacks themselves. So the result is that, you know, many people come away thinking, well, gosh, you know, these people were just insane. The actions of the shooters at Bondi Beach and in Syria and elsewhere, they're not crazy people. What they're doing is completely consistent and logical given their worldview, which, of course, is Islamic ideology.
Yeah. And that's the part that's really concerning here, because, again, we hear people continuing to defend it, also saying that this radical Islam and Islam. Do you see a difference in this, Larry? Because I've someone who has examined the Quran. I'm actually doing a project myself right now where I'm flagging each individual page where I find a call for acts of violence so that we could bring that straight to our audience every day. But the reality of it is we see people go out there and try to make there seem like there's a difference. There's radical Islam and Islam. Do you see a difference?
No, there's not. And let me provide just a little bit of context for that. I'm in the Islamic world, frequently. I've debated high-level Muslims on CNN International and Al Jazeera and where the real radicals meet, which is in Hyde Park, London. Now, when I had a run-in in Cairo earlier this year with highly publicized event resulting in me providing some testimony to Congressional Oversight Committee outside of the USAID compound in Cairo, one of the people who was key in me surviving that was a good Muslim friend. Now, he's a Muslim, culturally speaking. He does not take Islam particularly seriously. So the point that I'm trying to make here is that Islam, when it's practiced seriously, when you're taking the hadith seriously, you're reading it as you're supposed to as a Muslim, when you're reading the Quran and taking it seriously as you're supposed to as a Muslim, and when you're modeling your life after Muhammad, as all serious Muslims are supposed to do, the result is this. This is what you get. So they're not radical Muslims who are doing these things. They're Orthodox Muslims. And so those Muslims who are very nice people, they're not nice because they're Muslims. They're nice because they've chosen not to take Islam especially seriously.
Yeah, and that's the part that I have a hard time wrapping my mind around. Like you just detailed, the person who you know personally, how are they able to rationalize, though? Because this is something that I've never been able to understand, and maybe you could help me understand a little bit better, Larry. You know, when you say you practice and you're Muslim, how can you sit there and practice something that calls for over 100 acts of violence to non-believers? How can you skip past all of that and then still believe in the religion itself?
You know, that's an excellent question, Brianna. I think the way they get around that in my own experience is by really just kind of suppressing the question. Mm-hmm. They really don't want to think about that. And they'll say to you, you know, I don't believe that. I don't think that's the right thing to do. I don't think that's actual Islam. And when I try to push them and say, no, it actually is, because this is what the Quran says, and this is what the Hadith says, and this is what Muhammad did. I mean, Bondi Beach, opening up shooting against largely a Jewish population here on this particular beach, which of course was the goal. Muhammad slit the throats of 800 Jews in a single day and tossed their bodies into a ditch, meaning that is Islam. They're supposed to copy him, model him the same way that Christians are supposed to model Jesus Christ. But there's a big, big difference between the two. So I just think that so-called moderate Muslims, they're not really serious Muslims, or what I call cultural Muslims, meaning their parents were Muslim, the country they grew up in is Muslim, but they're not particularly into the holy writings of Islam.
Larry, would you consider, because I know, in Texas, for an example, when I was sitting there at the public hearing that they held for EPIC, that's the East Plano Islamic Center they're trying to build up. They've purchased the land, but a lot of people were trying to argue and say that this is a First Amendment issue because they were bringing up Islam as a religion. Do you deem this? Do you think this is actually a religion?
Well, whether it is or not, let me just run with it and just say, okay, it is a religion. It mm-hmm. really doesn't matter because, like, for instance, a senator from my own home state, Alabama, Tommy Tuberville, is currently stating, we need to ban Sharia. I would have Senator Tuberville take it back, one more step. We need to ban Islam. And the reason is because Islam is an ideology, or if you prefer, you can call it a religion, but it's one that is antithetical to our Constitution. Therefore, it's eliminated from constitutional protection because it is by definition, misogynistic. It is by definition anti-Semitic. It's by definition pedophilic. It's a religion of violence. By definition, it is an ideology of conquest and therefore doesn't deserve First Amendment protection.
Yeah, and I think that's key here, too. And, you know, so we're on the topic of anti-Semitism. I think it's interesting to play this clip, clip 14, I want to play for you, because this is the reaction of the Australian Prime Minister after the Bondi Beach massacre, the terror attack that took place that day. Take a listen.
Just briefly, to be clear, your priority from National Cabinet in relation to the gun laws, what is the number one priority for you?
I would put them all together, making sure that they operate effectively and that they're kept up to date and that they're updated for the changing threat. Mm. We live in a more dangerous world in 2025. The threat of anti-Semitism, as we have seen, is very real. Threats of other occurrences, such as the rise in the far right, which has also been identified, of course, by Mike Burgess, is also a threat as well.
It's interesting to hear him just say anti-Semitism and then also blame those on the far right. I don't see the connection here, Larry, do you?
No, absolutely not, and there's none. But it comes back to where we began, and that is they're not going to let this tragedy go to waste. They're going to use it to push an ideology that they know they're lying when they say these kinds of things. And by the way, the statistics show that quite frequently in these kinds of shooting events, now it sounds like the perpetrators at Bondi Beach, they had weapons legally. They were members of gun clubs and these kinds of things. But let's just take something like let's say the Charlie Hebdo, you know, massacre, again, perpetrated by Muslims in Paris. What did they use? They used 3 fully automatic rifles. They used 10 smoke grenades. They used Molotov cocktails, rocket launchers, sticks of dynamite, grenades, all of which are illegal. So the laws here aren't going to do anything but prevent law-abiding citizens from having weapons to defend themselves. And that's critical in this. 2A exists here in the United States for a reason. And every other freedom we have hangs on that one, Second Amendment right there.
Yeah. And it's a very important one. And I also wanted to get your take on the devastating news in Syria. You know, we spoke about this at length yesterday, but we obviously have 3 Americans who are killed in Syria, 2 of them being soldiers, National Guardsmen as well. As many of our audience knows, we detailed that yesterday for everyone. But specifically, a lot of Americans are wondering, why the heck are we still in Syria? Your reaction to the terror attack, the ISIS terror attack that took place, because we're hearing from the Pentagon, and I've asked follow-up questions to get more information about this, but the individual who carried out this heinous crime is someone who apparently is ISIS, is someone who's being described as a lone shooter, but also, according to several reports not confirmed by our Pentagon, this individual was somebody who was also fighting with the Syrian forces. So what do you make of what took place over the weekend in Syria?
Well, didn't Biden tell us that ISIS was eliminated? I mean, they were done. They were just not an issue. And yet the shooting at Bondi Beach, it's an ISIS connection. And then we have this shooting in Syria, another ISIS connection. I lived in the south of France for a few years and in a small French village, Brianna. And in this French village, as in every French village, and we're talking very small, there was an Islamic study center. And the French were shocked when in 2015, the people of this village are watching French television and they see a blue-eyed, blonde-headed kid from their town on TV. He is in Syria and he is burning his passport and has joined ISIS. So these kinds of things, you know, this has been going on for quite a while. And why are these things happening? Well, in large part, you know, I would trace it back to, dare I say, suppression of belief in God. And you end up with all of these kids who are directionless. They have no purpose in life. And then here comes Islam offering them something, a real mission, and one that appeals to boys, in part because Islam is a religion created by men for men to fulfill every carnal desire. You want to rape women? You can in Islam. Allah approves. You want to kill people? We do that. God allows you to do that. You want to pillage and destroy? ISIS is for you. Islam is for you. That's the religion that we're talking about. And that's why it has a lot of appeal, not just in the Middle East, but also in the increasingly in the Western world.
Yeah, yeah. And it's deeply concerning. And speaking of that, you know, here in the United States, we are trying to fight off the illegals that have come into the country. I know the Trump administration has made that a top priority for them. And we just got this clip moments ago, and I actually wanted to play it for you, Larry, because in clip 17, we're seeing chaos amongst the Somalian population as federal agents are trying to make their way into the community. Let's take a look. Now, we'll let this play out for a little bit longer, but if you're listening audio only and you don't see the visual here, they are actually chasing those federal agents who are obviously just trying to do their job. But Larry, we talk about it all the time. This is an ongoing issue for our federal agents who are trying to take some of the worst off the streets these days. And, you know, I've asked DHS specifically about a recent report that came out that they're only focused on those with violent priors, the worst of the worst, as they always put it. And they wouldn't give me 100% confirmation, just saying that they've always focused on just that. But the polling numbers seem to be kind of showing that the American people only want violent illegal aliens tossed out of the country, that they don't really have a stomach for just those who are law. I mean, they're not even law abiding. They're criminals, too. But I mean, those who are not violent, they don't want to see them deported. What do you make of this footage that just came out moments ago?
Well, I would say in this instance, ICE, they're heroes.
Yeah.
But you're also getting a picture here of what Islam actually is. Where are all the Muslim leaders around the world stepping up to offer aid and to condemn the violence from these attacks? Where are they? Well, of course, they don't actually exist. And what we're seeing here is, you know, the focus on simply those who are, quote unquote, have violent priors. The reality is every Muslim in this video has the potential to be that. And that is because they're often, I've had Muslims tell me this. In fact, a Syrian who's currently living under fatwa, meaning a death sentence because he became a Christian. But I recall him telling me in a secret meeting, he couldn't meet anywhere publicly, in a secret meeting telling me that the way Muslims are radicalized, that is, moderates become radical, is he said, we're shamed and being told that we're not good Muslims and that Allah is displeased with us and we face eternity in hell. And this serves to radicalize them. That's what happens. And at the most basic level, Brianna, I would put it like this: to let Islam into our country, indeed into any country that hopes to remain free, it's like letting the orcs into the Shire.
Yeah, no, it truly, truly is, Larry, and you're spot on with that. We hope that there's enough time where we could pull this back and we could try to fix these issues. I know our federal agencies are trying, DHS specifically, I'll give them credit. They are very much trying and focused on doing just that. But we will sit back and watch. Larry Taunton, thank you for joining me. Of course, folks, give him a follow on X. Larry Taunton is where you could find him at. He's also the host of Ideas Have Consequences. I like that name. Larry, thank you for joining us. We appreciate your time as always.
Always delighted to be with you, Brianna. Take care.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, my friend. Folks, I just got another update in regards to the Clintons, and I'm going to bring this to you right now. It looks like the House Oversight Committee Chairman, Mr. James Comer, well, he's being very, very kind, apparently. He has now pushed back the deposition dates for both Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, warning that if they refuse to testify regarding the investigation into Jeffrey Epstein, this will immediately trigger contempt of Congress proceedings. And I'm sure both Bill and Hillary will take this threat very seriously. I think they will. Probably not. They never do. They understand that this DOJ is a conglomerate of cowards, and they will never, never go to prison because, well, everyone fears the consequences of going after these two you see here. So James Comer issuing another threat, probably another aggressive letter. We hope there's some action to follow on that one, but I won't sell you a dream. I'll just spit the truth to you. It's more that we're going to be diving into. Specifically, though, I'll get to this into the next hour. If you don't follow me on X, I'll take a second to brag, but you're kind of missing out. Yesterday, we got the very first update. I brought it to you first before anyone else. Regarding Mark Kelly, I'll give you that update in just a few moments. But again, if you missed my tweet, you missed out. The corporate media followed after I released the details, and we'll give it to you next. We'll also be discussing President Trump's executive order that he's just signed, declaring that fentanyl is a weapon of mass destruction. We'll see what that means. Obviously, as you guys know, he has declared a war on the drugs that are being brought into this country, with thousands of Americans being killed. And he has made this a top priority. So I'll bring you the latest on that. Plus, President Trump suing BBC for a whopping chunk of change. Got that coming up next. It's a big one. It's a big one. We'll also show you the edited footage to kind of help you understand specifically as to where he's going with all of this. I want to play clip 15 for you, though, because yesterday Michelle Obama spoke about Rob Reiner. As many of you guys know, Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle were apparently were murdered by their son, who struggled with addiction issues. And it's devastating to see, because I think most Americans understand what it's like to have someone that you love dearly struggle with addiction. And the way that they were both killed was absolutely just heartbreaking, egregious. I can't even think the words to describe it. Obviously, President Trump, I spoke out against it. I know many others did as well, putting out not only just the post on True Social, but also giving us a soundbite that I won't even replay because I thought it was completely disgusting. We should always be as humane, I guess would be the term. I mean, we should not be going after somebody who was just murdered, brutally murdered by his own son. Had his throat slit. I mean, there's no reason to bring politics into this. We are all human beings. We could agree to disagree. We could be respectful of one another. If you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all. That's what my mom's always told me. But unfortunately, that's not the case for the president, who's being ill-advised on that front. But Michelle Obama yesterday spoke out and kind of made a little jab at President Trump. Take a listen.
To bring up, I know you and your husband were friends with Rob and Michelle Reiner, and I'm very sorry for your loss.
Oh, my God.
How long have you known the Reiners?
We've known them for many, many years, and we were supposed to be seeing them that night, last night, and we got the news. And let me just say this, unlike some people, Rob and Michelle Reiner are some of the most decent, courageous people you ever want to know. They're not deranged or crazed. What they have always been are passionate people in a time when there's not a lot of courage going on. They were the kind of people who were ready to put their actions behind what they cared about. And they cared about their family, and they cared about this country, and they cared about fairness and equity. And that is the truth. I do know them.
Michelle Obama
announcing that they were expected to have dinner the night before, which is news to the world, of course. It's just absolutely devastating to see. And it's disappointing to see the president speak so ill upon someone who is just brutally murdered, of course. All right, we got more kicking off in the third hour of the show. Don't go anywhere. We'll be taking your calls as well. So if you'd like to chat, give us a call, 877-789-2539. We'll talk in a bit.
I didn't plug last hour because I've been so focused on the news. If I don't plug, we won't be here, because I'm not funded by the Qataris or the Israelis or the Russians or the Jews or the Easter bunnies. I am funded by you. So I'm going to sell you products that really work so you want them. Now, we got two different flavors, fruit punch and in Freedom Mango. I didn't name this. It's a very, it looks like a firecracker. It's a beautiful cover. Ultimate power. How about unlimited power? Emperor Palpatine. But it really is a pre-workout, post-workout, Turbo Force 2.0. I mean, this is seriously powerful, super high quality. Everything it does for your body is next level. Ignites mental clarity and focus, cleans, sustain energy, enhance blood flow and endurance, supports daily cognitive function. L-citrulline converts to L-arginine. Don't know what that does. We got the best formula of it. It's amazing. L-theanine. Relax, wake up, clarity, and focus. Natural caffeine from coffee concentrated. Vitamin B12, the highest quality. B6, and more. This is really strong. If you love Turbo Force, you're going to love Ultimate Power. We should call it Unlimited Power. I remember Palpatine on the cover. The point is that it funds the operation. I said, hey, we need a clone of this product or make it better and, you know, for their store. And they said, okay, this is what they came out with. I've been on them for a year to do this. It's really strong. Tiny little scoop. This thing, by the way, is heavy. This is like a whole bunch of servings, like a couple months worth. So get yours now. I like the fruit punch flavor. And by the way, today's though one of the last days. You can get 60% off on Ultramethylene Blue, Irish Sea Moss, Shilajit, and more at thealexjonesstore.com. Thanks for your support. Hour number 4 straight ahead.